And it is time now for our Friday gathering. This week I'm joined in the studio by Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Alison O'Connor, columnist with The Examiner, Dr Jennifer Kavanagh, lecturer in law in Waterford IT, and from our Limerick studio, Patrick O'Donovan, Minister of State in Public Expenditure and Reform, and Fine Gael TD for Limerick County. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for being with us today. Patrick O'Donovan, you said during the week that Sinn Féin is running out of buttons on their calculator to keep up with their spending promises. Your own party, though, seems to be telling people that they'll just have to wait until October, until the budget, for any more help. Is that right?
No, it isn't. And the Minister for Social Protection, Heather Humphreys, was questioned about interventions that the government have already made on the 6-1 around the News at 1 yesterday by your colleague Brian Dobson. And I think it is fair to say that if you contrast what's happening here in Ireland with the interventions that government have already made in the hundreds of millions of euros in direct and indirect supports for families across the country, and the government is acutely aware of the fact that, you know, rising fuel costs is a massive problem all over Ireland, all of which is outside of our control. So it isn't the case of waiting until the budget, because we have already made significant interventions that if we hadn't made them, the situation would be even worse.
But yeah, just when you say about fuel costs being outside of the government's control, I was just looking in the Mail yesterday and it made the point that the government is taking in, the state is taking in 300 million a month on the taxes on petrol and diesel.
It is, and that money is used to pay teachers, to keep hospitals open, to do roads, to pay subventions to things like the public service broadcaster and everything else that the government has obligations to do. So it goes into a tax pool that the government used to spend to keep the country running.
There's no spare money there, is what you're saying.
Well, if you look at the indebtedness of this country at the moment versus other European countries, it is considerably high. But the Minister for Finance has already said, I think it may have even been on your own programme, that the government isn't going to take the view that that no interventions can be made. We've already made significant ones. And if you look at our European colleagues, I mean, yesterday even the European Central Bank, in order to be counter-inflationary, did something that I suppose really everybody expected, but that's obviously going to have an impact on people as well in relation to mortgages. But the government has to be very conscious of, and I know that some people mightn't like to learn a lot from history, but the last time in the 1980s that Britain and Ireland experienced inflationary measures like this, when governments go out to do something that is in an unplanned way, it can actually cause more damage in the long term. So we have to walk a very fine line here.
Okay. Well, I just want to bring Matt Carthy on this, because I'm just looking at a speech that Pascal Donoghue, the Minister for Finance, made this morning at the ESRI, and he's talking about the budgetary challenges ahead, and he's saying we'll continue to help with the cost of living challenge, but overall we'll be aiming to design policy in a manner that does not add to inflationary pressures. In other words, budgetary policy itself must not become part of the problem. And does Sinn Féin recognise that? Because you call all the time for government to intervene, but he is saying here, and Patrick O'Donovan has just said the same thing, that that can cause more problems.
So I had a very quick glance, I have to say, of Pascal Donoghue's remarks before I came in here, and I have to say it will provide very little comfort to those hundreds of thousands of families and workers who right now, in the here and now, are genuinely wondering how they're going to make either their mortgage, their next heating bill, their next their next fuel costs, because we have to recognise that there is a particular and almost unique set of circumstances that apply to Irish workers and families beyond what is happening internationally, because already we were paying, for example, the highest rents, highest childcare costs, mortgage interest rates are among the highest in Ireland than anywhere else within the Eurozone. So already people naturally had priced in very high costs. What has happened over the past 12 months in particular is that necessities have increased to such a level that people simply can't make ends meet.
So what do you want to have happen?
So what we want, and I'll agree with Patrick on one point. If it weren't for the measures that government introduced, people would be in a much worse situation. My point is the government haven't gone far enough, and where they've acted too slowly. So what we need is, and I agree that it has to happen in a structured way. That's why we have asked for an emergency budget that is structured, that is set out on an economic, as part of an economic framework that ensures that those people who need support most get it. So we've argued, for example, that government must go further in relation to fuel costs. it is a fundamental cost that people who need their cars to travel to work cannot avoid. And government haven't gone as far as they even can within the EU framework, but they haven't even made a case at an EU level in respect of fuel costs in order to reduce those costs further, because people cannot pay €2.20 a litre in order to simply get to work when there's no alternatives. There needs to be a recognition that, for example, the social welfare increases in last year's budget aren't even a dent in the increased costs that have happened earlier on. So there also needs to be targeted measures. But we recognise, and everybody recognises, that government can't insulate people from every cost increase that has happened.
And you accept that?
Of course. But we also would argue very vociferously that government can and should do much, much more.
So you agree with Heather Humphreys then that there's no magic money tree?
Of course there's no magic money tree, but in relation to the fiscal space that is available, in last year's budget, on budget day, government projected a deficit of €8.3 billion. That's going to be closer to €2 billion now, according to the most recent projections we have. So there is fiscal space, but we have also outlined some revenue raising measures as well. But this has to be done in recognition of the real lives that are being lived in the here and now by families who are simply at the pin of their collar, and they need support. And government have been much too slow in recognising the challenges that those families are facing.
Okay, Alison, to bring you in here, we're back to fiscal space, but maybe we'll leave that one to one side, because just in my mind, as we're having this conversation, I've got Evelyn O'Rourke's report about childcare costs. And when you hear parents of young children saying, "I'm dreading the summer," you know that something's wrong somewhere.
Yeah, and you also know, don't you, listening to that, and I heard Evelyn's report, and you also know, listening to that, and the amount of money that parents are paying out and the stress they're under, that this must be acting as a contraceptive for couples all over the country who are either deciding not to have a child or not to go on and have another one, which is quite a situation.
Or women who are not going back into the workplace.
Are not going back into the workplace, despite that being a stated aim of the government. The issue as I see it, though, is Elaine Loughlin had the story in the Examiner this week, quoting Roger O'Gorman, the Minister for Children, you know, and there was the phrase "a couple of hundred" was being tossed around. And you would have to say, in terms of assisting parents, you'd have to say on one level, for it to make any meaningful difference, if you're paying, like some people in Dublin, paying close to two grand for, if they have two children, it would have to be at that level. And yet, at another level, that is a very large amount of money for a government that's under pressure on all fronts to be contemplating paying out. And also, even the very fact that there's a huge difference between what you're going to be paying in a city, particularly Dublin, and what you'll be paying rurally, and how do they balance that out? So the job, as I see it, for the government at the moment is there's a massive expectation management going on. I mean, it is interesting to hear Matt saying that he agrees with Heather Humphreys that there isn't a money tree. But Sinn Féin, as is the job of opposition, are a very good opposition, have the government on the ropes on a whole host of things. It's an ideal time to be in opposition. I'm not suggesting they're welcoming inflation, but it makes it a very easy target on the government. I think we won't see the summer statement until the end of the month, and I think it is going to be one of those living documents right up until then, as the government is trying to see the situation as it unfolds. I don't think we're going to see a mini budget, and even within the government, I think you have the Taoiseach talking about the squeezed middle, that you have the childcare issue. I think we will see some very targeted measures on fuel poverty as well. But that you were talking about Pascal Donoghue earlier, saying, you know, being very cautious, even his party leader giving out a different message. So that's within one party. And then the fact that you have a three-party coalition. So it's going to be, I'd say, the government are dreading the summer, and that they think it could be a very long, silly season of stories relating to the cost of living.
Jennifer, what's your take there on what Alison said, that Sinn Féin has the government on the ropes?
Well, I think any party that will be in opposition, it is perfect time to have the government on the ropes with the inflation situation, the fuel price situation. So much of it is international factors. But when you look at the price of fuel, whether you drive or you don't drive, whether you're urban or rural, everything that you consume comes on the back of a truck. So you will be facing this increase one way or the other. Yes, there's a massive issue with childcare. Schools are finished over the summer, so parents need something for their kids to do. And people have been crying out for years for state-funded say, you know, summer camps or coming into early years education. And the more money and the better structure you have in the early years education, the better it is for a child, because education is the one thing that actually can move them on. But, you know, if it comes down to, say, moving VAT rates, moving duty, all that kind of thing, there is always that element of distrust because prices will still go up. People will not see that impact. But one thing that nobody ever talks about is, why don't we look at the tax credits and give something more back to people that will actually be there in their in their
Patrick O'Donovan, you're agreeing with that there. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong title earlier on. You're, of course, Minister of State at the Office of Public Works.
Oh,
so my apologies.
I was in the Department of Public
Expenditure.
You
were indeed,
for a while.
Changed in 2020. But, but you were agreeing there with Jennifer on the tax credits.
I am, because I see it in, and Alison referenced it there a while ago, that there's a big difference between urban areas and rural areas in relation to childcare. And in rural areas, you know, we depend an awful lot, and I know from personal experience, from my own friends, from my own family, we depend a lot on childminders and family members in isolated rural areas because we don't have the same network of facilities in many cases that would be available in urban areas. So if you're going
They're not really available in urban areas at the moment either. But anyway, I take your point.
Yeah, the infrastructure would be, but the places aren't. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, in terms of actually fulfilling what the Tánaiste was saying, from my perspective, as a parent of three young children, and given the people that I suppose I'm dealing with on a regular basis, it has to be a blended approach. It has to be an approach in terms that takes into consideration people in terms of their tax credits as well. And I've been advocating that for a long time. But, you know, Matt said that we're, you know, that, and I find myself actually pinching myself agreeing with a lot of what he said. But anyway, he said that we're in an almost unique situation, which of course we aren't. Because if you look at Power Northern Ireland, they're proposing almost a 30% increase in energy charges for this summer, which will hit in the winter. So, and I mean, I was watching Newsnight the other night in BBC, and petrol prices and diesel prices at the pump, when you do the sterling differential, they're not a million miles off of what it's here. So this is not something that the Irish government alone is somehow swimming around on our own. And Britain has far more access to oil and petroleum products than we have. We have one gas terminal off of the West Coast, and after that, everything is imported.
Yeah, but so, I suppose the question governments everywhere are dealing with or grappling with is whether to try and do something, to try and chase this now. Economists seem to agree that you can't chase it and win.
That's the point I made at the start, because if we need to remember what happened in the 1980s and what happened in the late 1970s in the UK as well. When you try and chase this in an unstructured way, which is what the government are, you know, not saying that we're going to do. I mean, the ECB only made an announcement yesterday. Had we had an emergency budget 2 weeks ago, like what was being looked for in the opposition benches, it would already be redundant. So, I mean, if you start chasing this in an unstructured, haphazard way, you will actually make inflation worse.
Mm-hmm. That means you don't sit there and do nothing, though, Matt,
no,
would you say?
It doesn't mean that.
Here's the problem. Patrick talks about a blended approach. Unfortunately, from this government's perspective, there's nothing in the blender at the minute, only mixed messages, because they're proposing virtually nothing. Patrick has no proposition to offer today in terms of what the government intend to do in the here and now to support those people who
look
are struggling
at what we've done already
in the here and now. Patrick, I was actually wondering how many sentences I'd get through before you interrupted me.
Because you've had a good run of attacking
Patrick,
me, but can I just ask you one question?
Go on,
Which of the measures that we've done already, given the fact that there's a fixed amount of money available, which of the measures that we've done already would you say shouldn't be done in order to attribute that money elsewhere?
See, Patrick, this is the point you're missing. What I've said is you haven't gone far enough.
And you've this acted is the answer you too, give, don't answer
acted,
the question.
You've acted far too slow. I'll tell you what we should be doing right here before the summer recess is introducing an emergency package of measures that includes direct payments to those families who need the support most. It includes
a reduction.
No, you haven't.
Well, yes, we have.
No, you haven't. That includes supports in relation to reductions in fuel,
which we've done in particular.
Not far enough. Again, and that includes the propositions that Sinn Féin have put forward for many years now, not just since this cost of living emergency really took hold, in respect of the cost of rent and childcare in particular, two of the costs that are facing many of those families who are suffering the most as a result
have been
of
made
that.
In both of those
again,
already.
they haven't gone far enough. And the facts of that are found by speaking to any family.
Matt, you just said a while ago that the magic money tree was dead. You just planted it here again.
No, I didn't. Because what we have put forward is a suite of proposals that are fully costed, that outline where and how the government need to act. What government have done time and time again is actually refused to accept any of those proposals. And in every instance where the government have acted, they've acted after months of sustained campaigning on the part of Sinn Féin, trade unions, and other organisations.
You haven't identified a single issue that the government government has already done that you would disagree with or reverse and put that money elsewhere.
Can I just say one more time? Nobody is suggesting the government can do everything. Nobody is saying that the government have done nothing. What we are saying is the government can and should do much more than they already
have
done.
Yeah, there is one thing that the government has done that is actually a very good move, and that was reducing the cost of public transport. And I know that is something that is benefiting urban people a lot more. But if there is to be further cuts on taxes or anything like that, maybe they should price it and see should we
see
be looking at through transport.
Germany, where you can go on any public transport for a whole month for €9.
Exactly. So it actually deals with two problems, the carbon problem and the cost of living, and it'll encourage more people to get onto public transport. And if you do live in the urban or the rural areas, coming into the urban areas, at least then you can start using the park and ride.
I think in Germany they've got really good public transport though as well.
They do, in fairness, but at least it is
I
helping
come from
with
a county
two
where
different
there is
problems.
Virtually no public transport whatsoever. So while reductions in public transport costs are welcome,
but we can't
for those,
throw every idea out just because it
I'm
doesn't
not throwing
suit
it out
one
at all.
One
I'm saying, but I'm saying is, and that's a good idea, but what we need is a suite of measures that address the needs of families that are in different circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Claire, could I segue for a moment to a story that's in the front of some of the papers this morning and that genuinely sort of took my breath away? And this is the story that the ministers were briefed yesterday, that the various departments had not got their act together in terms of handing land over to the Land Development Agency.
For housing, yeah.
For housing. And you're also looking at sort of the, it was also to do with like the HSE, the ESB and various other agencies. Mm-hmm. And like at Cathal Brua Barracks, I mean, I believe the army is absolutely completely messing around in terms of Cathal Brua Barracks, a prime spot in the middle of Dublin 6.
Well, maybe they have good reason to want to retain it. I don't know.
No, I mean, you can understand why they might want to retain it. But I mean, I think we're in the middle of an acute housing crisis where there's even a moral imperative that you would have to say that you would act as quickly as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And instead there being these various groups, not just the possessive and selfish and this real silo mentality. No, the government absolutely have an obligation and should be putting the pressure on. But to read this at this stage of the housing crisis, I just found it quite extraordinary.
So it seems that the ministers at Cabinet are concerned about the lack of urgency by state agencies. So it's not that the Minister for Housing is turning to his colleagues and saying, I have a problem with you here. It's ministers saying they have a problem with the state agencies across the board, is it?
Yeah, so it's that in essence, yes. So that if you say, if you look at, we'll say like the HSE apparently has quite a bit of land, even like the ESB bodies like that, or the Department of Defence.
I'm just reading the Independent says the HSE,
to,
the ESB and the CIE, ministers have expressed concerns about the delay in those agencies giving
off
the land over.
They were asked to go off and identify, everybody essentially was asked to go off and identify land that they would have which would be suitable for housing. And I'm not sure exactly what, but I mean, that must be, so that's going on for years, as we know. So that this is a particular imperative of the government at the moment, and that this is the briefing that they're getting at this stage, that it's essentially at a snail's pace. I mean, it's actually kind of, it's difficult to believe that that's the briefing the ministers got yesterday.
And it's difficult to believe that this is anything other than spin. And I would encourage anybody with an interest in this area to actually read back on the transcripts of the legislation underpinning the Land Development Agency, because Ono Brin said that this is exactly what would happen under the context, because the Land Development Agency wasn't given compulsory purchase powers that that local authorities have. And that's why it would be much better to actually fund local authorities to actually engage in these house building programmes than always find convoluted ways. And what I found most astounding was the headline in one of the papers this morning that suggested that the Taoiseach is talking about banging heads together on housing. How many years are we into a housing crisis? We're into over almost 2 years of Micheál Martin's 2.5 years as Taoiseach. And now he's decided that it's a good time to start banging heads together. I think it just shows the priority of where this government put
but
the housing needs of so many
mind
people.
Bear in mind the state bodies that look after the registration of property and actually figuring out who owns which bit and even where the boundary is. That is taking a very long time anyway, because they seem to be very short-staffed. And that's happening with all conveyances.
But we're in a housing crisis. Like, this is an emergency. And I think we've seen how
but
over
if everything
COVID
is still on maps
and passport, we've transferred staff when
it
we
doesn't
needed
really
to.
Work
if you look
that well
at things as obvious, I've already mentioned the Barracks and Rap Mines. Dublin Port is another absolutely obvious one. And if we can sort out things like that at this stage, mm-hmm. I mean, you might as well throw your hat at it.
Patrick O'Donovan, what do you say to all that?
Well, I agree with the commentary that, you know, it's the Land Development Agency have to work within the context of land conveyancing. And I know that as, you know, Minister with responsibility for a considerable amount of the public land, an awful lot of our land, in particularly in urban areas, is untitled. Mm-hmm. And to try and get it conveyed from one body to another isn't simple. And I know it makes for great headlines, but as somebody who's dealing with this on a weekly basis in relation to land conveyancing, you know, trying to establish clear title. And it's not all just about resources, it's about the complexity of it. Now, I don't know the detail in relation to this, but the particulars that that Alison has referred to, but just in relation to the Defence Forces, I mean, the Minister will be bringing forward the Commission on the Future of Defence proposals under a memorandum to government in the next week or two. And I think once that is established, in terms of we all want the investment in the Defence Forces, we all want a proper modern Defence Forces that, as well as that, that is not only based regionally but is also based in urban centres like Dublin. And I think, you know, the next fortnight or 3 weeks will give clarity around that.
All right, listen, we'll leave that one there. Just before we finish up, I want to move to golf. So another segue, as Alison said earlier. I just wanted to play you a clip. This is Graeme McDowell explaining that he had to resign from the PGA Tour in order to play in this LIV golf tournament.
It was a tough decision. I wanted to keep the moral high ground and kind of remain a member of the tour, because I really didn't feel like I needed to resign or that I should have to resign. You know, it was a very difficult decision. I kind of resigned out of an abundance of caution, honestly, just because I felt like, you know, it puts me in a less litigious situation regards, you know, getting drawn into anything unnecessarily. But like I say, I didn't want to resign.
Hard not to follow that story during the week, Matt. And we were talking about it here on the programme with Greg Allen yesterday. And it's just the money involved. So Phil Mickelson's been given $200 million just to turn up. And then whatever he wins on top of that is the extra little sugar coating. What do you think of what Graeme McDowell said there?
I think this whole situation very unsavoury, I have to say. And just going talking about the situation of the cost of living crisis that so many people who actually fund all these sports through their subscriptions and their purchase of merchandise or whatever.
That's it.
And they're
shouldn't
looking listen to
either.
These type of sums of money. And then we see this, what I think Greg described as sports washing, yes, it were, yeah. Some of these regimes are investing huge sums of money into essentially trying to spruce up their international reputation rather than just implementing basic human rights, which would be
But then on the other hand, the point is made that the Irish state does business, Jennifer, with Saudi, and they don't get the same level of criticism as the golfers have been getting over the last week or so.
Yeah, but you know, if you're trying to use, say, and they've done it with music as well, they had huge music festivals over in Saudi Arabia, that if you're trying to create that image of, you know, we're getting more liberal, more democratic, I mean, just take, for example, women being able to drive in Saudi Arabia, that the women who are campaigning for it are still in prison, but other women now are able to drive. But I mean, governments do business with other governments. That always happens. You're not going to cut off one country, you know, even like we still have the Russian ambassador here with everything that's happening in the Ukraine. So governments will always need to talk with each other. And as part of that, there will always be a certain amount of trade. But when they go out and make themselves look soft and cuddly with the golf club,
yeah,
and they're spending all that money, you do have to question what's going on.
Taking up golf, Alison, over the weekend?
Jeez, I wouldn't be doing a round with Graeme McDowell. Anyway, I mean, the man, isn't he an irony-free zone, the moral high ground? I mean, he and the guys that wouldn't know the moral high ground, I'd say if it bet him around the head. I mean, the lot of them, it's all money, money, money. You know, as you said, it's been a fascinating story. And I know there is an awful lot of moolah involved, but it's kind of to allow yourself to be used like this, mm-hmm. you know. And mm-hmm. I think for a lot of them, it will, like, for here on in, whenever anything is going to be written about Graeme McDowell, for instance, because he's Irish, you know, our look backs on his life and his career, this will be writ large.
But sure, look, it depends what motivates you, doesn't it? If it's the cash.
Yeah, indeed.
Then what's he going to care about what people say about him? We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for joining me today, Matt Carthy, Alison O'Connor, Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh and Patrick O'Donovan, of course. And that is it from us for today and indeed for the week.